Welcome back to another episode of the Alchemist Lounge. As always, it's your host, Alex Atwood, and I am so looking forward to a captivating discussion today with my dear friend, Jamie Starr Crawford, who is a real-life phoenix who transformed struggle into a force of power for good. So who Jamie is just an amazing guide for those navigating mental and emotional mazes. And I met her at the first third wave coaching course, certification course. And we spent some time together. We learned all about this incredible psychedelic integration community and psychedelic community as a whole. And so she's here today to talk a little bit about her journey, where she now helps others find their path to freedom. So this is going to be a very exciting conversation. So I'd like to start, because I just looked at your website and I saw that you have this tattoo, and then you have your little one and you have that picture, and the tattoo says our lives are not our own. And that was very cool. Can you share like the story or like why that's meaningful to you?
Yes. So the tattoo itself comes from the movie Cloud Atlas. Have you ever seen it?
No, but I guess I need to.
Well, Alex, you get to put that to the top of your list. It's a movie about the journey of soul development, is how I would relate to it. And across time, across space, how people keep meeting each other over and over again, but we reincarnate differently based on our decisions that we make today. And so all of these encounters that we have with people are determining the course of our life, the course of our destiny from moment to moment. And so this, our lives are not our own, to me, is the essential truth of connected reality. We are all interconnected, all having a collective experience where we are impacting and influencing each other, whether or not we're conscious to it or not. And so to me, it is a valid reminder, not anymore, but it was back then, that every word that comes out of my mouth has the ability to impact anyone at any time in any situation. So be intentional with what comes out of your mouth, Jamie, and know that it's impacting and having an effect like an echo across time. And so it's giving gravity to the fact that we're all in service to each other. We're all here for each other. No one journeys alone. And we've got to put that ridiculous idea of separation behind us so that we can get to the good stuff.
Yeah, I love that. And also what it sounds to me like is that we're not in control. And so therefore, really, it's a matter of not necessarily judging from good or bad or outcomes, but coming from intention, and with the intention and the understanding that there will be some sort of result, right? And whether it's good or bad, who knows, right? Who knows what's good or bad is anyway, right? I love that. I love that. There's so many different meanings there, and having it there on your website was really cool and impactful. So, but take us back in time, because we haven't had a chance to like really connect about your journey. What's a childhood memory that really made an impact and helped shape your journey?
That's a great question, because at this point I've identified so many, either that put me into the dysfunctional pathway that I did, or started to hint and whisper at the purpose that was intended for my life, even in the moments where I originally thought it was trauma. You know, so it could be just the state of the environment that was very high achievement driven, sports oriented household, where I was 5 years old and I'd be picked up on a Saturday from a friend's house to go run miles on the beach. Because that was
at five?
The expectation of at five.
Wow.
And so, you know, we'd have a agility cone work in our backyard as a stationary setup.
Jeez. Oh, wow. It's like, yeah. It's like Ninja Warrior.
So yeah, it kind of felt that way at times. And, you know, right now I've gained so much appreciation. You know, at first it was, how could you do this to me? And now it's like, oh, thank you for showing me what excellence looks like. Thank you for showing me what drive, determination, and how to overcome anything, because you gave me discipline so that I could put that into usefulness one day after I would go through my own rebellion, of course. So I would say just this state of the environment that I was raised in, you know, catalyzed both my greatest disasters and my greatest glories in my life once I transmuted it. Mm. And I'd say probably the other two examples I can think of is one, and you don't quite recognize it sometimes, because as you're healing, sometimes we cross compare notes with other people and we think, well, I didn't get that abuse, or I didn't have that particular thing happen. And we miss some things that are actually quite pivotal moments in our childhood. And I had a friend who I considered my best friend for 6 years. And one day she goes, "You're too weird. I don't want to be friends with you." And that was the moment that changed my entire outlook. Of, I gave myself the story of, "You're too weird to be friends with. Something's wrong with you and you need to go figure it out." Well, the strong way of dealing with that at the time was, you better start taking notes on humanity to figure out why it is that you don't fit in. And the gift of that is that I would start to play observer, witness, note taker, and I would start to psychoanalyze, even at 10, all the different patterns of people around me, just to find out how I could be part of the crowd. Which was to my benefit and also to my greatest dysfunction, because I would try to mold and manipulate myself into all these different chameleon versions that would leave me completely fractured, and I'd have to put that all back together in my adulthood. But I would grow such a perceptive quality about people, patterns, environments, and I pretty much made a profession out of it.
And this was what age?
This is 10.
I see. So mm-hmm. Was there any judgment in any of those sort of scans you were doing of your environment? Did the judgment show up there as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Because you have to make meanings. You have to make meanings out of everything happening to you. And when you don't have that much information or people guiding you or teaching you about what other things it could mean, a child will personalize it. You know, so I would think, well, I'm not good enough for this. And yeah. Clearly I don't belong with that. And I don't fit in with this, and, you know, whatever idea of myself, you know, so I would make judgments, but those judgments would be filtered through dysfunctional beliefs. Hmm. You know, so that absolutely, you make judgments at that point. You're 10. You'll do anything to fit in.
So at that point, you found this winning formula, right? You figured out that you could step away. You didn't realize it was that, but it was some sort of winning formula that you put together, right?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say it was a winning formula. It was a survival formula that I could benefit, because at the time I developed such acute depression that it was the only reward that I could find in my life that was worth going after, because I took on a pathway of isolation where I wouldn't be in friendships. I wouldn't pursue friendships. I would probably develop some sort of projection that would push people away, or I would accentuate my uniqueness, which was definitely at the time considered weird. So I would, you know, propagate a lot of that, but it was a survival formula that if I stay out of the way, then people won't have to tell me how weird I am. Mm. So it was a survival instinct.
Wow.
more than in a winning formula.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it could be covered up as like, hey, I'm winning, right? But at the end of the day, you're right. At that point, you're surviving. So how did that show up? Like, you know, as you started to get older?
Yeah. The inability to maintain friendships. There was always this constant voice assessing, reassessing, what are they looking at? What are they thinking? What are they, are they going to push me away? Should I push them away first? Do they not like what I'm wearing? Was it I just too loud right there? Am I too emotional? Are they going to, you know, look at this? Are they going to think this of me? I better fix that quick. Yeah. So this constant rumination of judging.
Yeah.
And thinking to myself, you know, I'm not quite sure who I am, but if I'm enough like that person, maybe we'll get together and I should develop an interest in what they're interested in so that we can find some common ground here. I did that with every friendship. I did that with every boyfriend.
Yeah.
And the best part was I really found genuine interest in it. So I developed a Renaissance approach to being a Jane of so many different trades because I was genuinely interested. I want to know why you liked what you liked. But I didn't know who I was, so I would take on your traits until they didn't work anymore. So that would later on cause a bit of a break, a bit of a meltdown, you know, certain suicidal moments in life where the depression and the fracturing became way too much. It manifested into gut conditions, thyroid conditions, kidney conditions, chronic migraines. I couldn't sleep well. I'd have nightmares 4 times a week. I didn't eat correctly. I was addicted to alcohol. I developed codependent relationships. So when you look at the result of how that pathway would then explode in my 20s, there was more dysfunction than function. And the thing is, I was just wise enough and intelligent enough to keep going.
Well, I'm absolutely positive that there are those in our audience that resonate with that story. And I happen to watch some junk TV. And if you ever watch junk TV, any reality show type of situation, you'll find lots and lots of these constructed sort of relatable reference points that people attempt to build relationships on. And inevitably, and I think part of the success of some of these types of shows are the drama that comes from there. But in real life, that drama is actually trauma. And you continue those patterns and they're almost reinforced by what's happening out in the social stratosphere. Right. So, you know, what you just described is something that I think is there's a pattern that just keeps happening over and over again. When did you come to a point where you actually realized you had awareness of these patterns that you created?
I would say maybe around my mid-20s is when I started to gain a bit of honesty. And I would say honesty because I would, no matter how much feedback I would get from my mother about how the direction of my life was headed, I always had some justified reason why it was totally fine. And I was righteous enough and defensive enough that I could make a really valid case for why it was okay that, you know, I would choose the profession that I did and why it would be okay I'd go out that many times a week, or why I would be able to throw everything I had in my relationship. And it's okay. Relationships matter. They're the most important thing. Well, when the rest of your life is falling apart, relationships are a great place to hide. So I would say probably mid-20s. And then it really came to a point where I entered a relationship with an individual that I fell madly in love with, and we were going to get married. That was it. I was like, you found the one. And we had the most up and down, romanticized, dysfunctional wonderful mess of a relationship that you would consider toxic by all standards. But at the time, we were trauma bonded in so many different ways that we thought, this is it, it can't get better. But both of us were completely broken. Hmm. And so after a while, it got too much. He left, I fell apart, and I went to the bottom because I put everything I had, all of my stock was invested in that company. And so when that fell apart, I went into a really deep hole. And that was a dark night of the soul that I had to go through where I said, you know what? You better figure something out quick because this is not working. Nothing is working for you anymore. Let's get real. And that was the beginning, is that I had to break in such a way and have my reality taken, is what it felt like at the time. But it really, it was a collapsing. It was a wake-up call to say, you can't do this anymore. Do you see that? It left. It left you with what? Now you got to face all this. Oh, no. Shoot. You're right. Hmm. Let's walk.
Hmm.
That was it. A reality check will do it.
Yeah. So what was next?
What was next was pretty much the level of non-functional activity that I could handle at the moment was going to a meetup group for ADHD adults, where for the first 6 weeks, I would just sit in the corner and cry because everything that she was describing resonated with me and was like, I don't want to contribute to anything in this conversation right now, but I'm going to show up anyway because someone once told me that showing up is half the work. So here I am. And that showing up turned into starting to use the tools of self-awareness and self-inventory because what I understood was, oh, it begins in the mind. So this whole thing I have is all messed up and jacked up and twisted. I have to untwist all this stuff in my mind that's producing these terrible emotions and this unfavorable behavior. What more can I learn? So I would go down this pathway for 10 years of picking up every book, going to every training, listening to every podcast all about the mind. And then that would lead me to the mind-body connection. What is energy? How does that work? What is trauma? How does trauma work? Oh, wow, that is trauma. Oh, wow, that and that actually impacted me. So it was a rabbit hole of self-discovery that started with, your mind's jacked up. We should do something about that.
Wow. So when did, that's fascinating because there I see that those structures you built in the beginning of your life, where you understood that, you know, taking something on and following through and, you know, making sure that you had excellence in that, you could apply that now to this new discovering and research and questioning and learning and learning and learning and learning. So let's talk about purpose. So when did you have clarity about what you're doing now?
That was the biggest evolution process that I would still consider an evolution process. Mm. I have recognized that purpose is an ever-changing revelation. It's a constant unfolding and unveiling process that takes off what false ideas of self existed to reveal and remember truth and design. And so that has been something for a very long time that piece by piece, starting with, I think I want to help people. Hmm. And it began there. And I would follow the breadcrumbs and I would follow the impulse and the inspiration to go to what is next. And this 100% drove my mother mad because I didn't follow the pathway. Nobody in my family was like, here's how to be an entrepreneur and here's how to take your own pathway and here's how to, you know, build your own thing. I was supposed to go the pathway of the 9 to 5 and I didn't. And that put me through master's in counseling program. Nope, that wasn't it. And then I would go to, you know, this energy Reiki work. No, that wasn't it, but I learned something. And I would go through NLP practitioner. Oh, that's more a piece of, but that's not all it, you know? And so it would keep unfolding and unfolding and unfolding. And over that course, I would recognize in this moment, I have something that could help someone. And so I would do that. And then the next unfolding adventure would say, aha, you have more pieces. Now you have more clarity. Now you have more tools. Now you have more to give others. And so that's what it's been for 8 years, is a constant unfolding process that defines and then redefines my purpose.
Hmm. There's a lot of alchemy in that statement.
Tons.
What triggers, like, where you want to focus your energy? Like, is there a particular, is it an evolution, or is it, do you just sort of allow it to unfold?
So I understand, and it's gone past belief. It's just something I understand about the way that we work in our impulses, not our impulses that are instincts built from, you know, certain algorithms. I mean, the impulses of desire, the ones that are inspired pictures and visions and passions and things that wake you up in the middle of the night, or things that you become really interested in. And that's a scent. That's a scent that you can follow. And the more you articulate what exactly that is, the more information you'll be given about that thing. And so it's about following the scent that is of desire, of, some people call it higher calling. Some people call it inspiration. It's just the one thing that you agree with the most, that you're like, yeah, that I want more of that. And you follow that. And so for me, it was every so often I would learn to articulate the vision I was seeing and who that vision was for and what role I was playing in that vision. So there'd be certain components that would evolve and that would change, and they'd have a new articulation and a new picture. And every time I would get that new picture, I'd ask myself, okay, who am I in that picture? What role am I playing? Who am I helping? In what ways? What's the goal? How do we do that? And then, ta-da, now it's articulated. So once articulated, then I could put my yes stamp to it, because that is also what is required for us when we get that, oh, I should be doing this. Well, yeah, you got to go say yes to it. Go say yes to it. And then watch life literally move mountains and part seas so that you can actually go do that thing. Because sometimes life, God, is sitting there going, I need this to happen, and you're the person to make it happen. All I need is your yes, and I'll do the rest. Hmm. So that's the alchemy protocol that I have followed.
Now that's very well said, and also takes a lot of time to cultivate that, what you just described. Yes. There. Because, you know, you've had a decade or so of doing this work and looking within and being able to pull that. And, you know, this is tough stuff for some people who are just trying to get, yes, their arms around all of this. So you mentioned some visualization. What are some go-to practices or some routines that have sort of helped you along the way, and that you, maybe something that you use today that you feel like you use with people that you work with and they're very effective?
Absolutely. So one practice that I used to do all the time, that I have a lot of clients do when they first get like a really fuzzy, like, something, I had this thought the other day and I don't really know what it means and it doesn't really go with the rest of my life. I'm like, okay, great. So I want you to 20 minutes every day, meditate and go, I'd like that thought to come to me and let's play. Let me just play with it. Because sometimes the picture, we give it way too much pressure, as though if I need to figure it out right now, instead of just playing with it. And so sitting with the picture even just the one little thought that I get and I go, okay, let's play. Tell me more. Tell me what else. And so that's a very short 20-minute visualization. I'm just going to sit here and whatever comes to me, and then I'm going to write it down. Hmm. Well, you do that so many times and you write it down so many times that you start to see a pattern and you start to get the certain information more often over and over again. You go, okay, I think I get the picture. I think this is it. I think I'm supposed to go this direction. So that visualization practice is one way to let information begin to arrive to you, because why? You took the time to give it attention. If you don't take time to give these things attention, and that's what we do usually in the beginning stages, we kind of write it off. Like, oh, it's that thought that passes by and then it hits one of the misbeliefs that I've got and I go, yeah, not for me. Yeah, it's too much money. Yeah, it's too much. That kind of thing. It's like, no, daydream. Sit with it. Play with it. Invite it in. Just be with it for 20 minutes. That's 20 minutes of your day. And then you can go back to your life. You can go back to your program. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes a day. Another process that I have that I've given myself is a 5-minute, what is my purpose? So it's a journaling practice every day. Sometimes you do it at night. Just what is my purpose? And that can help demystify even the quality of purpose, because even in our society, we got such a large connotation behind it. And it's like, oh man, that's a daunting thing to find out what my purpose is. And it's like, oh, well, you have a purpose today. You have a purpose with your friend. You have a purpose at your company right now. You've got a purpose just showing up to the grocery store and being kind to that person in front of you. That's why is that not a purpose? You know, so it helps to mystify the fact that there's one answer when there isn't. It's an unfolding answer because you're so much bigger than what you think. And so having that practice where you go, what's my purpose? And stream of consciousness flow, where you just put your pen to paper and whatever comes out, you just write down. And sometimes you go, I think I knew that. And sometimes you go, how does that relate? But either way, if you do that enough times, you start to get a pattern, because that's what you're looking for, is a pattern. We recognize patterns, we work in patterns, we follow patterns. So when we get a pattern, somehow the ego goes, oh, I see the familiarity here. I get what's happening here. Okay, fine. I could play with this more. That works. And I'm not so terrified of it because I'm demystifying the gravitas of like, I need to find my purpose. Or you could just sit down for 5 minutes and journal for five, you know, what's my purpose? I'm waking up today. Okay, great. What's your purpose tomorrow? I don't know. I'm going to work. Okay. Okay, the next day, what's your purpose? Being a big sister. Okay. Well, then the next day, well, what's your purpose? Being kind to people. Oh, you see, we're going somewhere here. We're getting out of the layers of doingness and commitments and roles. And then finally we get to the good stuff of like, I don't know, to love people. What? That's an ambiguous answer. What do I do with that? I don't know. Keep going. Keep going. So something like that is simple as what is my purpose? 5 minutes every day as an exercise. Doesn't matter what you find. Just do it, because it's an unfolding process that will take you on a journey of exploration into places that you didn't know existed in you.
Wow. I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation where it's been, what's your purpose? And you immediately, at least for me, it lands on me like, I better come up with just such an inspiring, heartfelt, deep, meaningful, broad, expanded, like kind and non-ego, non-dogmatic. And the next thing you know, it's just, you just fall into this trap. And I love that. Yeah. Because life is always unfolding and your purpose can change and it can deepen. And so that's wow. I want to talk about self-confrontation. It sounds like part of the visualization technique that you were talking about included some self-confrontation, but that's a real powerful tool in your kit. So could you share why it's so important, and maybe like for a few of those self-confrontation questions that that help to guide you?
Absolutely. So the purpose of self-confrontation is to meet ourselves in an honest way, because the ego constantly is giving us a false perception of what we are and what we're capable of. And so we have to get behind walls of trauma and things we really bought into, like, I'm just not that kind of a person. And it's like, are you? Really? Are you? So self-confrontation is an unpacking process that requires, first of all, radical honesty in a way that if anything that I am asking for is landing at all as a question, sit with it. Don't run from it. Don't write it off. Don't invalidate it. Sit with the question and just try it on, like there could be something there. The reason that we want to very carefully and graciously unpack our perception of self is because we are wired to keep that projection fit. Like the ego's job is to keep this illusion alive. And so to be like, oh my God, have I been lying to myself? Well, yeah, of course. The ego's job is to give you this idea so that you never walk into that pain ever again at 5 years old. But, you know, we're 35 now and maybe we can handle it. But the 5-year-old in us is like, nah, bro, you can't handle that. So we're just going to keep pretending that we're this person and you don't belong there. We don't read the self-help books, that we don't do therapists. That's just not our thing. You know, I don't talk to people. That's not our thing. And it's like, it might be. It might need to be your thing, you know? So it's like the idea of it might need to be a process that I walk down. Self-confrontation is the only method to actually take off the mask, because I don't even know that I'm wearing one. That's the issue, is that we don't even realize that our personality that we think we are is a constructed one. Constructed, mm-hmm. Bought into, developed, conditioned. And here we are thinking, oh, it's just how I'm made all messed up and broken. And I'm just an angry person. Are you? Because we do that. We protect this illusion. And we're not necessarily doing that, you know, as a negative intention. It's just the design of the ego. So the confrontation process must be willing to challenge every identity statement that I've ever given myself, to say, you know what? Am I though? Am I these things that I box myself in and label? Am I really that just kind of person? Maybe not. Even a question like that, because going back to, you know, what kind of questions? Challenging statements like that to say, am I really? Or where did I believe that? Where did I get that? Who told me that? Who decided that? Those are shaking questions that are going to at least loosen the grip of what you think is truth, so that it starts to really reveal itself as, oh, wait, that was just a belief that I bought into. Interesting. What else did I buy into? What other masks do I have? Am I really this kind of a person, or did I just learn to people please to get love and attention? I wonder, oh shit, that's really threatening, because what if I'm not this kind of a person? Hold on. Because self-confrontation, if done outside of compassion, doesn't work. I must have grace and compassion and unconditional kindness for myself to even go through the confrontation process, because otherwise my ego won't give it up. I've got to start with kindness for all that I find and compassion that I was even that way to begin with. Because what we're going to have to recognize and realize is that all these things that we find, none of them are true. None of them are us. We know that. But most people don't. Most people, including us, at one point, really bought into like it's us, and it's not. And so we have to ask questions with total kindness, absolute self-regard for ourselves, to be like, okay, no matter what I find, no matter how disgusted I feel at this, no matter how much I want to reject this or angry or grossed out I get about this, I'm going to be okay because I demand kindness from myself. You're going to, you know what? This is fine. Because compassion leads to awakening, understanding. I see why this happened. I get why I would do this. I know why I made this up, and I know where this came from. I see the pattern unfolding. Wow, this feels more powerful because I can do something about it. As opposed to like, that's too much. Get it away.
That's a lot of unpacking. And
it's a lot of unpacking.
It's a lot of unpacking. This kind of leads to where we met, which is through psychedelics. So, and I say that because I'm really curious as to how you see psychedelics playing a role in this unpacking or in mental health, you know, broadly.
Right. That's a great question. And so if we understand that the role of the ego is to categorically keep certain things in order so that we're comfortable, we have this illusion of control, this illusion of safety. If I'm like walking away from danger and I'm in this cute little safe box here, there are certain things that even through 30 years of talk therapy, I will never address because certain defense protocols are saying, if you dare look behind this, you're going to die. And so what happens is that my soul, I've got many, many realms of my soul. You can say soul is synonymous with mind. So this soul, I'm not soul, I'm spirit. I have a soul in a body. But this soul has many different rooms, and sometimes those rooms don't talk. Sometimes those rooms have locks on them that if you open them, you'll explode. So what psychedelics do is open all the doors, turn off the defenses, and let everybody come into the living room so that we can have a conversation. And so to me, this idea of ego disillusion is saying those protocols that were set in place so that I could have all parts of me talk, I get to actually see the pieces of myself coming together now for the first time in an honest way. All these compartments opening up in a way that I didn't think that they could. When we have all parts of us starting to talk, what happens is there's a coherence that is created. And a coherence is another way of saying wholeness is being restored. Because through conditioning and trauma, we fracture, we dismember. And so we want to put those pieces back together so that we can function from a state of harmony. So when we can't function from a state of harmony, we're in disharmony, which leads to dysfunction and disease. Psychedelics are another way of allowing that conversation to happen so that I can actually have an experience that is authentic, even if it's difficult for me to experience, all those pieces can come back together. That's my take on soul.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of that unpacking when psychedelics, specifically in a group setting, happens, can happen in a way that expands through the power of the group and also through just the connections that aren't just made there, but in the relatedness that everyone feels. Because as you said, when we started, we're all in this same journey. And connecting to others who are going through the same process is extremely powerful with or without psychedelics. So lastly, I want to talk about self-care, because that's so important. When we're talking about self-confrontation and we're talking about all this stuff that we're taking like right head on and deconstructing all of this scaffolding that's been put across our lives and in our minds. Do you have any tips for listeners out there who might be, you know, needing self-care, maybe battling anxiety or depression or any of those sort of things, like based on your own journey towards your like evolution and emotional well-being?
Yeah, to me, self-care is synonymous with boundaries. Like just plain and simple. Like that is self-care to me. And I've had an evolving idea of self-care that originally was like, take a bath, drink a glass of wine, you know, watch a movie. And then it evolved into, well, how exactly is that enhancing or benefiting me? If I'm caring for myself, is this not a process of restoration? Well, what is restoration? Well, that's a great question. I don't know if this movie is essentially restoring me or this glass of wine is restoring me. So then I would go down, you know, a pathway that would say, well, are these things that I'm using actually escape? Are they numbing? Are they soothing acts of self-care? And then I really got to the end where I said, wow, the greatest act of self-care I can use is boundaries. Knowing when to say yes, when to say no, how much to give, when to give it, what you're capable of, when you need to be filled up first, and having certain regulations for yourself put in place so that it could guide you into greater pathways of empowered living. So I think exploring, where do I not have boundaries either with myself? Like, where do I say I'm going to do something and then, you know, give into an obligation or put it on the back burner, or, you know, oh, I scheduled a massage and I'm going to go, you know, I really need it because I've got all this tension in my shoulders and it's been causing a headache. And like, okay, great. Go schedule it. Well, I had to, you know, prepare a dinner for my family and da da da. It's like, wait, hold on. That was a boundary that was possible for you to actually follow through on a self-care act. Notice that it has nothing to do with that act itself, but the permission quality and the follow through of that intent. So if we lack boundaries, we don't actually have access to full care of ourselves because I'm constantly compromising and negotiating. And through those negotiation processes, I'm giving up my sovereignty. I'm giving up my priority. And how do I even find the time to care for myself if I don't put myself as a priority? So whether that's I have a philosophy of parenting that says everybody goes first but me, or I have a pattern, a role that I picked up in my family that says I need to take care of everybody and I need to make sure that they're done, if they're taken care of, I'm fine, you know, or my business needs me and I need to, you know, spend 80 hours a week doing X, Y, and Z. And if I don't, well, then we're going to go under, this is going to suffer, that's not going to get done. And then I don't actually go to the place where I think, well, if I do have boundaries, what other things can I put into my life so that I can put myself as a priority? Because our health will suffer if there is no boundary. So self-care to me is boundaries.
Wow, that's powerful. And it is something that feels like honoring your boundaries really allows for freedom. Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely. Wow. It's the foundation for freedom. Mm-hmm. Knowing what you want and having boundaries put in place so that you can actually honor that desire, honor your values, honor your pathway. And in honoring your own priorities, you have so much more bandwidth and sustainable practices that you can serve at such bigger levels with more space inside of you because there is such fullness about you.
Wow. That's something that really reframes how we look at how we structure our time and honor ourselves. So, wow, we've covered so much here, Jamie. This was incredible. You're doing so much in terms of your own self-work, but I know that you do quite a bit for others who are going along the path. So people that are listening to this and feel that they would want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
So you can go to my website. That's how the majority of people find me. I have my booking there. You can schedule a call with me and we can connect and see, you know, where you're at, what do you need, if I can support you, and what kind of pathway would that look like? You know, I always want to make sure that people are clear before they ever go down a pathway, because the more clarity that you have about what you need, the stronger participation you will have with the people that you call in to support you. You know, so that's I want to get people onto a call with me so that they can get clarity even just for themselves, that they know what they're participating in and what they need so that they can clarify that. So that's go to the website, book a call, and then we go from there.
Awesome. Simple, simple. And life can be simple if you just honor your boundaries, yes, find your freedom, find your empowerment. Thank you so much. This was such a fascinating conversation, reframed so much. And I can't wait to see you soon.